what's the name? What's the paper? Black and let everyone know that you're listening to this being recorded.
Okay, so let's get started, man. This call is being recorded between who am I?
Between Jared Haley and Jared Sexton.
Yeah, that's good. You don't use your middle name?
Well, I do. I just it makes me feel like an asshole.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it should.
Well, I mean, like, I published under, maybe this would be a good place to start. I published under Jared H. Sexton because there's another Jared Sexton in academia.
Okay.
And that dude is, like, this prominent race theory guy.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've actually been to readings before where people have come up to me and they've been like, I really love your article about amalgamation of race in America. And I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
This is not what I signed on for.
Mm-hmm. You could be like his imposter, though.
You know, so I've actually thought about that. Like, I could actually sort of like go in and I've wondered before if I could actually fake my way through a lecture. Like, if I could just be, you know, because the name is what sets it up.
Right, yeah.
So
nobody knows what they look like.
That's exactly right. But it's also, like, in terms of saying my full name, like, it's almost awkward. It's a mouthful. Jared Yates Sexton.
Yeah, you don't want
to. You have to pause.
Yeah, it's weird to refer to yourself like that.
It really is.
I don't even like saying my name, and it's just two. Two of them.
Yeah. It's an odd little situation I've got, actually. I used to mess around with, I'd be like, oh, everybody can call me JY.
Right.
And all of a sudden, everyone started calling me Jai. It's like, oh, that's not going to cut it. That's not
gonna cut it. Oh, wow. I used to call you JY.
You did?
I guess that was during the time when you were messing around with it.
Well, and you know what? I mean, you're my boss. You can call me whatever the hell you want.
Well, I think JY is kind of cool.
It's certainly purpose.
As long as it's not Jai, though.
Jai doesn't cut it. It does not cut it.
Oh, that's good. That's rich.
I like that. That's a very grandmotherly thing to say. That is rich.
Oh. Okay, but let's probably start. Oh, this is a good transition, though, because I think by way of having a nice casual lead-in, I was going to ask you about your book. How does it feel?
You know, in all actuality, is one of the weirdest experiences I've ever had in my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of look forward to it, and then all of a sudden, as soon as it happens, you realize that this thing that you've been doing by yourself in, like, solitary confinement and sort of kept away from the world, all of a sudden, it's just sprung forth, and, like, people are going to have opinions about it, and there, you know, your family is going to read it and they already don't understand exactly what it is you do. And all of a sudden they're like, what is this stuff you've been doing? it's a very, very surreal thing. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's odd.
Yeah. I guess I never really thought about people having opinions about it.
Yeah. You know, you don't really consider that because you always think about art as just this sort of like self-serving thing that you do, like your own barbaric yawp or whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, like, people are going to read that and they're going to make opinions about your writing and they're going to make opinions about you.
Right.
Like, I had a student a couple of nights ago show up to my class and she had a copy of the book. And, you know, I have to be like a serious professor. Wait. And there's stuff in that book that's bizarre.
You cut out a little bit. What were you saying about you had to do what after she...
Oh, no. I mean, I have to kind of put on airs as a professional person.
Right. Yeah.
And there's just bizarre stuff in that book. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's going to affect the way she comes to class.
Yeah, but that's the way of the creative writing teacher, though.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair.
You're all a bunch of nuts.
Yes. You're part of it. I love that you're talking about this. Like, you're up on a mountain looking at all of the crazy people.
Well, like, I don't teach. Like, that's the thing. I would like to teach, but I don't.
I could see you. You know, I was actually thinking about the other day. I think you'd be fantastic teaching, like, an editing class.
I would love to, man. Like, I think so. But until that happens, you know, it's just me and these guys I email with, you know?
I think you'd be pretty good. Someday I'll have to have you come down here and just be like, say whatever you want, have no theory behind it whatsoever, and just talk for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'd like that. What's next on the docket, man?
Well, I'll tell you what. I am sitting here at my desk right now looking at a copy of Bull Men's Fiction 2.
I've got mine as well. Donald came prepared. Pollock
staring at me stoically.
Right, yeah, now. Don Ray Pollock. We just put this up. Well, I guess when this goes up, it'll be a week ago. We put this up last week, but we put up some excerpts of your interview with him, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that. Good interview. Good guy.
Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Great guy.
And a fine writer, too, right?
Absolutely. You know, actually, since I did that interview, a lot of people have been coming up and saying to me, they're like, I was just reading Devil All the Time, and it was fantastic. And I agree. I think it's one of the best books come out in a really long time.
All right, I'm going to call on you right now. Because this is one of the questions that I wanted to ask you about Don Ray Pollock, because when we were talking about his books, and you said that you liked Knock 'Em Stiff better than Devil All the Time.
Listen, I kind of knew you were going to put me on this. I think Devil All the Time is a fantastic novel. I think it's really, really quite amazing. Knock 'Em Stiff, in sort of the canon of American stories, it is way up there towards the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's that good. It's almost like Larry Brown and Charles Bukowski had just a disgusting child.
Who lived in Ohio.
And he lived in Ohio and had a lot of things to say.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Have you read it?
Yeah, I read both of them.
Oh, so where are you on that?
And I am dying for another one, dude. Like, I finished both and I'm like, gosh, I want more, you know?
Well, you know what I realized? I was reading through the interview again, and it was something I didn't realize at the time that he had said it. But I don't know if you noticed this either, but he said he's been reading a lot about World War One.
Yeah.
Right? And then in the interview, I asked him what his next book was about, and he said it was like set in like 1918 Ohio.
Right.
So I suddenly had the realization the other day that Donald Ray Pollock is going to be writing World War One, like, battle scenes. And that is the most exciting thing I've heard in a long time.
Oh, yeah. You're going Dan Brown on this. You're, like, deciphering things.
Yeah, I put together at first, and I wish I would have so I could have asked him about it. But I just realized, like, he's going to write a World War One, like, set novel.
Yeah, it could be like a War at Home novel, though. You never know how deep he's going to get over there.
That's exactly right. But one scene with gas and barbed wire, that's all I need.
Oh, yeah. Those two things, huh?
I mean, if anybody's going to touch it, it should be Donald Ray Pollock, right?
Where did that come from, gas and barbed wire?
That's World War One. They fought in trenches.
Okay, yeah. You're just like... like taking the two dominant images of World War One and like saying, "Hey, Don, give it to me."
If Don writes a novel about World War One, I'd put good money on the fact that there might be barbed wire in it.
Yeah, I think there should be.
Yeah, but he, the funny thing is talking about him and violence and all that.
Uh-huh.
Couldn't be a nicer human being.
Oh, I know. Yeah, at least over email, that's how I talk to him. But yeah, it comes through, dude.
Well, I've met him twice, and he's like the most sort of quiet, unassuming, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. He reminds me of somebody that I would have known, like, back home.
Yeah.
Like, it's wonderful.
Well, you guys don't live too far away, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, he's actually, I think he lives in Ohio now, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He lives in, outside of Knock 'Em Stiff.
Hmm.
But we both are from the southern regions of the... what do they call these states? They're like the vowel states or the
flyover states?
Yeah, but there's a lot of flyover states. I mean, these are like the jagged bottom edge states.
That say that.
Yeah. Those the snaggletooth states, we'll say.
The snaggletooth states, and that serves a lot of purposes.
Yeah, it's very rich, as they say. I think that's gonna be my slogan for these podcasts. That's rich.
That is catchphrase. That's good.
Dude, you kind of keep cutting out, and I wonder if it's gonna fuck up. Let's put a bookmark here, and I'll call you right back and I'm gonna hook up like not using the wireless, and I'm gonna see how that works.
All right.
I don't want to kill our momentum though, because it's really good. But I'll call you right back. All right. And we are back.
All right.
Oh yeah. I'm gonna have to edit out all this corny stuff that I keep saying.
That is the lovely thing about new media, is you can get rid of whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I just hope I can figure it out. But anyway, before we get off track, okay, so here's where I weigh in on the whole knock 'em stiff, devil all the time. Mm-hmm. I read Devil All the Time first, right? And mm-hmm. I didn't know what to expect at all of it. But I think it was just the right book for me at that moment. You know how sometimes that'll happen?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like exactly the kind of like tone you want to read and content. And mm-hmm. and I hadn't read a novel in a while. Like novel, you know, not like a collection or connected connection or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I don't know what to say about books, man.
But you have a lot of opinions.
I know, I do. And I just read this so long ago. But I remember thinking, like, this guy, he sounds like he's been writing for, like, 50 years, you know?
Oh, it's such an old voice.
Yeah, he sounds like he's, like, just a master, or like one of these guys that's been around forever. Like, he should be, I want to say, like, Faulkner, you know, but... Not like he's writing like him, but like he's just like that much of a pro that he knows that you don't have to write loudly, you know?
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting point to bring up, because when I read him, I feel like there has been a Donald Ray Pollock-shaped hole in literature.
Yeah.
And it's just been waiting for him to write these books.
Yeah, I guess you're kind of right. He is like taking a place.
I mean, there's nothing else like it. I mean, anybody who writes violence and grotesquery like he does, they don't have this sort of, they don't have the emotional part of it. There's not a sensitivity. It's just, you know, like torture porn. And he hits it on all fronts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that sensitivity, man. Like, even when he was writing, like the one story that he mentions in the interview, that story Back Teen, I was like mm-hmm. waiting for it, you know, like. When I got the collection, I was like, all right, well, that was his first story that he says is any good. And it's like in the middle, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I really want to read that. But you think it's going to be about meth heads, and it's just going to be like a horror show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the guy who's like, he doesn't want to be doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Which I thought, I didn't see it coming at all, and I was like, gosh, that's really awesome.
Well, you know, the thing that I like about him, and Devil All the Time, I teach that first part where in the very beginning of the novel, there's the father, and he sort of like, he like lashes out at these guys, and he's like violent with them.
Right.
And the thing about it, though, is like there's so much dark, grim stuff, but there's like, what's the word I'm looking for? There's like a dignity that he gives people. It's wonderful.
Like a dignity towards that guy?
Yeah, I mean, even the people who are being, like, terribly injured and, you know, violence perpetrated on them, everybody in his books, it feels like they get a fair deal.
Yeah, that's true. They always ruin it for themselves if they do.
Oh, absolutely.
What about
they're going to ruin it every time.
What about that guy in Knock 'em Stiff? I forget which story it is, but he's taking a shit behind a dumpster. And the cops come. Like, that's the one exception, I think, that might be to this rule.
By the way, I can only imagine that all of the people who hear this podcast who have never read Knock 'em Stiff or Donald Ray Pollock, like, they have to have heard that sentence you just said.
Right.
And they have to be like, what in the hell are we talking about here?
Well, they have to hear that and go out and get the book, right? I would.
I mean, if I heard that interview, I think I would buy that book.
But I was just like, when I read that story, and coming off of what you just said, I was thinking, like, he might be the one who just gets, he gets dumped on a little too much.
Well, you know, let's be honest.
Because the cops come, and then they're laughing at him. and his wife's in the car. Oh, man. But he does. All right.
You know, there's that moment in Knock 'Em Stiff. This was another quick one that not many people might know about. But it's the one where, like, the first paragraph, there's, like, something about the boy and his sister were sitting out by a stream.
Oh, yeah. That one's dark.
And they had their clothes off. And yeah. I read that sentence. And, like, instantaneously, like, I've never read a sentence that, like, sets a tone better than that. And you're like, oh, this is going to get gruesome. And it sort of tiptoes near getting gruesome, but it always sort of pulls back enough where it's not unbearable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I do remember that. It's the second one in there.
And that's right.
For some reason, I remember it being second, because the first one is pretty straightforward. But yep. Then it's like this weird turn right there, and you get this really weird guy. It's funny that you mentioned Tiptoes, because we all, or you know what happens in it, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, dun dun dun.
All right. Also, I think that's a good jumping off point. I wanna mention a couple of stories in here. Okay. I had forgotten about The Champion and the Louse.
Yeah, so you read that?
Well, I read it originally and right before it sort of made its way up the ladder. Mm. But I had kind of forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And I reread it a couple of days ago, and it is easily one of the funniest stories I've read in a really long time.
Isn't that thing? Yeah, he did such a good number on that.
Oh, man, alive. I got the thing out right now. This guy, for anyone who hasn't read the issue, and shame on you, you totally... I mean, it starts out so grandiose in the tone. False. This is me, merely me. Sad, perverse me.
Right.
And he takes on a girlfriend or a lady who ends up seeing that he's looking at internet porn.
Oh, like, man. I got to edit that out, dude. That's the clincher, man. You spoiler alert.
That's not the spoiler. There's things that happen after it.
Anyway. But yes, like that, I'll tell the story about that, man. It came its way up the ladder, right? And at first, like, I mean, you get the whole gist of it, right? You know, Poe and all that.
Absolutely. It's very gothic and grandiose. And
it's exactly like the Telltale Heart.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I mean, all that wasn't in there. And like, I read it and I read this voice and I was like, dude, this is like... The situation was there, the whole, like, porn finding. I guess we won't edit that out. It's not a spoiler. And I was like, oh, man, this is exactly the Telltale Heart. So I went back to him. I was like, look, what we have to do here is crank this voice up to 10. Like, seriously, like, go all out. And I was like, and he ended up giving me, like doubling the size, like, probably, like, 3 more pages out of it. And it was just like gorgeous poetry, you know, like just like that Poe mentality at, you know, volume 11, which was like, I was so impressed. And he's like in college.
Is that right?
Yeah.
He's in college kid. Well, I just want to read this very quickly. This sums it up for anybody who hasn't read this story. For an entire year, I mustered up the courage needed to invite her to eat dinner with me, the hungry fool. Then, to my great surprise, I asked one day, and she agreed to go to the Cheesecake Factory.
And blithely so.
Blithely so. It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah, man, that was right.
It's in the same tradition as, you ever read The Rape of the Lock?
No. You ever read that? The Lock? Like L-O-C-K?
L-O-C-K. This is like one of the most like anthologized stories ever. And it's like this old, like neoclassical, ironic sort of like, it's about a woman getting a piece of her hair cut off. And like it's thrown into the sky and it becomes a constellation. And I was like, this is like the modern Rape of the Lock. It's so good.
Wow. As long as we're reading from it, I want to read this one. It's like one of my favorite lines in the whole like issue. talking about, like, the way he described porn was so fucking hilarious. And the best part is, how the couples devoured each other. Flames consuming flames. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
That's so wonderful.
That's what it kind of looks like, doesn't it?
That's pretty good. I mean, I got the feeling that this person, you know, was writing towards that. Yeah. I mean,
of course, I mean, it sounds over the top, but it's supposed to be. I should make that clear to everyone listening.
Well, it's totally over the top, and the great thing about it is it totally parodies how ridiculous our times are.
Right.
But I mean, like, you know, how can you have these old classic passions when you're, like, getting ready to shoot off a text?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And he uses the emoticons in there, yeah.
I forgot about
it. Oh. So what else, though? Like, okay, I'm going to move on to Chris Terry's, the very first one in here.
Yeah.
I put it in because this is what I've kind of been wanting to say about this story is that I read this thing. I don't think it ever really saw anybody else's eyes because I think he might have even emailed it to me after I rejected another one of his, which is kind of good to note here because, you know, this came on the heels of a rejection. So anyone who's, like, looking out for us, let that be known. But like the story I feel like was so close. It just hit the nail on the head as far as like what this magazine is all about.
I agree.
Like what we're trying to do and how fiction kind of relates, or it can be like this means of getting, of talking about masculinity in the modern age.
Masculinity in a modern age, and it's a 17-page story, and there's hardly a wasted word in the whole thing.
Yeah. And, I'll let people know, it's about stay-at-home dads during the Dark Ages.
It's called Here Be Dragons.
That's right. But, I mean, it doesn't get, like, more creative than that, man. Like, at-home dads with their crossbows. And their cauldrons, and like it's just like the essence. Like if I was gonna boil any story down, like anything we've done, as far as like our mission as a magazine, I feel like that hits it so closely, you know.
Oh, it's great. Here's a quick little back and forth. Gerda, the wife, that idiot's back. Gerda said she was at the hearth stirring a pot of goulash. It's not so bad, I said. You'd forgive him for kicking you in your face, she said, without turning around. He's my partner. I'm your partner, she said.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man. Just the dynamics. And as a stay-at-home dad, and he is too, Chris Terry is, man, it doesn't get any better. Like, it hits no closer to home than that story.
I think that's a great story. Then you've got Inside Target, Michael Christian.
That one,
Which, I'll tell you what, this is, I mean, I would read a story like Inside Target every single day if I could. It's so weird. It's so odd. And it's engaging. It's one of those that, like, it's not completely realistic, of course, right. But it's just realistic enough to believe it, but it's also unrealistic enough for me to be wondering the entire time what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I was going to say, too, it's like, I forget what I was going to say. As far as realism and stuff, it's got enough of that, like that what is going on factor to make you interested, you know, in it as something that this guy created.
Yeah. It's totally its own organic world. And I'll just put that out there. If there's anybody who wants me to like what they're doing, don't include quotation marks, which is one of my favorite things in the world.
You don't like them or what?
I hate quotation marks, Jared. That is my new crusade. Get rid of them.
Jared, do you realize that we're going to start having to put everyone's quotation marks back in where they're called for?
I say get rid of them. I am starting a revolution against quotation marks.
I think they have their place, man. I don't think they can be given this, like, this banishment.
I'll say this. They have one place, and that's in journalism. and that's it. We need to know when someone's being actually quoted. Yeah. In fiction, no need. Dialogue tags.
I'll have to get back to you on that.
You sound wounded.
I just don't. All right, like, okay, say you got a tool belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, you're not wearing it or anything. It's just there. Say you got a tool chest, right? You got no new tools coming in.
Nope, no new tools.
Why take out one?
Oh, because they're aesthetically disgusting.
Mm.
They're dumb little squiggles. By the way, I can't wait until we do the next podcast or we have our next phone conversation, and you're just like, I cannot believe the amount of stories we're getting without quotation marks.
Like, yeah.
This might actually be a problem now that I'm thinking about it.
Well, man, I hope it is, because that would mean people are listening to this, right?
You know what? You are an optimist. That's a wonderful way to look at it. But no, I hate them. I hate quotation marks. Done with them.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was just noticing there's none of them in your book, or is there?
Well, no, there's none. Actually, I would say that 85% of the stories that are in the book originally didn't have quotation marks, and then the ones that did, we got rid of them because I was converted. I think it was Cormac McCarthy that did it to me, but I just realized there's absolutely no need for them.
Well, you know what? I think the tide is turning your way anyway, because with texting and all that having its effect on language, like, there's no need for an extra thing.
Oh, you're roping me in with bad technology.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's the kind of company you keep. You keep on that.
You're at heart. Man alive, that was quick. That's really impressive.
Anyway, why don't you say L8R while you're at it, Jared?
I do have a strange bedfellow with that, because I'm totally into minimalism.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, God, you just rocked my world a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
Are your students doing that? Are they using text speak in their papers?
You know, they are from time to time. There are emoticons showing up. There's now sort of a real movement towards texting being a story device.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of lame, because the immediacy of texting takes away from tension. And so, like, it's better to be worried about what someone is thinking or how they'll react to it, as opposed to having an immediate response. So But one of the things I have noticed is that a lot of my fiction students are replacing, like written out, like 700, like the number 700, instead of writing out 700, they will actually type out, like, the numbers 700, which is, you know, craft-wise wrong.
That's is it?
I believe so.
I think it's 1 through 20 or 1 through 12 should be written out, but after that, you're fine. At least that's like journalism, right?
If you work for the New York Times.
Right.
But I don't know. I have to go in a minute, but
okay.
You want to do our fiction picks real fast?
Yes, let's do them.
Okay, what do you want to start? Or?
No. This is your idea. I'm just following your lead.
I have two pieces that I've read in the last week that I really, really enjoyed. Blake Butler has a piece called Death Update, it's on Dazed, DAZED digital.com.
Okay, we could always put the link up too. I mean, it's...
Okay.
I'm sorry to, like, you know, butt in there.
I had to tell you where it's at. Death Update by Blake Butler. Really good story. It's one of the few times I've actually read a story set in the modern age that, like, makes it interesting.
Yeah.
The other is by Lisa Nikoladakis, and it was on Pank. It's called How to Date a Stalker, Declarative Verb Edition.
Declarative Verb Edition. Are there different editions of it?
I think it was just sort of being witty, I believe.
Okay, well, I've got to give it a little blurb. Why are you picking that one?
I don't know. I just really enjoy it. There's it's sort of like an understood second person. It's sort of a command list of, like, ways to date a stalker. But it's actually kind of beautiful in parts, and it's sort of, it deconstructs a story and puts it back together in a list. It's nice.
This is really cool. I like this feature. I'm glad you brought this up, man.
I'm full of good ideas, Jared.
Yeah. I mean, now I have something to do when we hang up, you know?
What are yours?
Mine? All right. Not to, like, change the game right at the start. Okay. But it's not like an online story or anything. But I'll tell you, there's this guy, this guy who wrote a book recently named Eric Raymond.
Eric Raymond.
And he wrote the book. It's called Confessions from a Dark Wood. And I just can't get enough of his stuff, man. It's like, it's one of the best books that I've read. I think it's like the best like indie thing to come out, or that I know of, you know, which isn't very much. But the guy is just like incredible. Like, he kind of writes, like I say, like Donald Ray Pollock does, but he's like an old soul writer, you know?
I like that.
His characters are just, and he's actually talking about something, you know? He's not talking about himself. Like, the book is about this, it's about marketing and like the new business age where it's just a bunch of bullshit. And it's like businesses, however many people you can bullshit is how successful you'll be, you know? Like, how can you get someone to believe what you're talking about? Like, how convincing are you? And the characters are just great. And it's full of, like, this absurd business speak, you know? But, like, I want to go on the record of saying, like, I think this guy is, like, a Vonnegut for our generation. Because he's so funny and so, like, effortlessly funny.
Putting it on the board.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was reading this and I was like, God, I wish you would have asked me to blurb it, because I got this great blurb.
What's the book again?
It's called Confessions from a Dark Wood. It's on Seder Press or something.
Beautiful title.
Yeah, it's a really pretty book, too. Like, they did a great job with it. Ken Bauman is the guy who published it.
I'm going to have to check that out. You sold that. You're a salesman.
Hey, I hope to be. And Kurt, I actually, like, when I finished it, I emailed the guys and I said, hey, can we please get this to Kurt? So Kurt Dawkins is going to review it probably pretty soon. He got it like a few weeks ago.
Nice.
So anyway.
I'm going to have to buy a copy. That sounds about perfect.
You really should. It'll be the best, like, what is it? Like $14 you've spent. I swear.
I tell you what, I get a lot of mileage out of $14.
Yeah. Well, this one will go a long way.
Well, I'll take that record. That should be the blurb, actually.
This $14?
The best $15 you've spent. That's a good blurb.
You could say that for like a mop head, though, too, right?
Well, I mean, that is completely true.
Anyway, all right, so this was a good one.
I enjoyed it. I say we do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. We're going to have to figure out some way to sign off of these things.
There has to be something clever to say, and it has to be bull involved.
Yeah.
Like, this is all the bullshit we can handle.
Oh. I don't know.
It's so terrible. That's awful.
I don't know if it should be bull involved. I think there's enough of that on the site.
See you in the pages?
I don't know. We're going to have to count on, like, some music coming back in. Maybe it's going to start now.
I like it. Let's start the music. I like that.
All right. Later, man.
Later, buddy. Bye.